I hope everybody had a great Halloween. I hope you had a great weekend. Thanks for including me in your weekly routine. If you're just here for John Heater, maybe you'll like the episode and you could follow us and write a review afterwards. We'd appreciate that. You could follow us on the handles at Ryan.
Inside of You Pod on Twitter, at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
That is correct. You can also watch the show on YouTube, which is always fun. Please write a review. Please follow us on our handles. Today's guest is a good friend of mine. He lived here. He was my horror movie buddy, and he moved away. And we have a fondness for horror movies, and that's how we became friends. We were at Universal Horror Nights, and yeah, we hit it off. Great guy, family man. He was Napoleon Dynamite, for God's sakes. Legendary role, Blades of Glory. Without further ado, let's get inside of John Heater.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You. Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
I love shorts. I love wearing shorts.
My guest today is John Heater, and he's getting comfortable.
Underwear all shows.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to keep adjusting. Hey, we're wearing the same shorts.
We are wearing the same shorts.
Basically.
Basically.
Oh, so basically.
That was a great story, wasn't it?
That was. Now you can explain. And it's not we, you were.
I was in the airport, and I don't know what got into me, but this guy was loud on his phone, folks. And he was just like, basically, like he wanted everybody to hear him. But for some reason, I responded, and I go, so basically. And he turned around and was like, gave me the finger. I was like, ew.
And so he tells me the story, and I'm laughing because that's funny for a number of reasons, mostly because you deserved it.
Yes. But he also went over the top.
No, he was people talking there. He might have been annoying, yes, but he would have deserved it had you had company with you. This is Michael. Like, you're alone. You're so used to doing this with your buddies that you forgot, like,
you can't do
that. You're alone. Like, not that you should do that when you're with your buddies. That's straight up just a gang of bullies. But it's rarely you see solo bullying because will do stuff for the attention, for the validation, for like of their peers. They're like, oh, I want to look tough in front of my peeps. So right. They will make fun of someone. They will whatever.
Well, I didn't make fun of someone.
You straight up mocked him.
Well, he was just so loud, and I was like, so basically, and he's like, yeah, phew, and flicked me off, right? Did you see anything wrong with what I did?
But I feel
everybody like, wants to do that, but they don't. I did.
But if I was there, I wish I could have seen, this is probably how it went down. He's talking, he's passing you, and you go, so basically, and then you look to your two ghost companions who weren't there, just like, am I right? Or even worse, someone else you didn't know passed by. And right, they're like, get off me, you creep.
Exactly. I had nobody to turn to. And I just kind of looked at him and go,
and you're kind of like, oh, that's true. Did I say that out loud? Yeah. And then he's thinking, did I say that out loud?
I thought I'd share that story with you guys. That's great. John was one of the first guests that has spent the night at my house. He spent the night last night. He lives out of town. He moved away. He said he promised he would come visit more, but he has a family, a big family. They live in Oregon. And
we technically live in Washington.
Washington.
Right on the border.
But you came down and we had a big horror movie night. We do our horror movie nights and we watched Black Phone, which we won't review.
What, you just said the word and now we have to say like
I just don't want to, like, you know, other than
we won't give spoilers, but the trailer does that enough.
Yeah, but like,
it gives everything away.
All I'll say, folks, is I don't want to get in the movie. It's not important about how good or bad the movie was.
It is, because you and I used to have a Patreon where we were reviewing. It was literally called Where Have All the Good Horror Movies Gone? Right. Horror movies? You say horror. I say horror.
Horror.
What
do you
movies.
Say, Ryan?
Horror.
I say horror.
Horror.
It's horror. A horror movie.
It was Where Have All the Good Horror Movies Gone?
And we would rate movies.
Because we love a good horror movie, but they're just hard to come by. And so,
and anyway, this movie, we didn't really enjoy it.
No, we weren't.
It was a shame too, because I had to rent it, and it was 1999, and
it looked nice.
Yeah, it looked nice, and there were some moments, but I thought Ethan Hawke was really good, but the movie was just lackluster. Anyway, you came down, and you've been busy with your life, and I don't get to see you a lot, so it's good to have you here. You know, let's go back. Let's go back a little to the beginning, how it all started, because you were living in, you were born in Colorado, right?
Yes.
And you grew up there?
No.
You grew up in Oregon?
Yeah.
How old were you when you moved from Denver or from Colorado?
No, Fort Collins. I was born in Fort Collins. I love having that connection, but you know, whenever people are like, sweet, I was like, well, we moved when I was two. So,
You have no recollection.
Yeah, really, yeah. No, my dad was, he was a doctor, and he then moved to, we were conceived in Japan. Well, that will become full circle later on. But
what do you mean you were conceived in Japan?
My parents, right before moving to Fort Collins, Colorado, he was stationed in the military as a doctor in the military.
Right.
At a base in Yokosawa in southern part of Tokyo. So they were stationed there, and we were conceived there. They moved to, I always like to, you know, I like that little, you know, brag. We were made in Japan.
Made in Japan.
So then we go to, Colorado, born there. And then they soon moved to Oregon. And that's right. Where I spent the rest of
my life. And so your dad's a doctor. When you say doctor, is it a family physician? So was he your doctor?
Yeah, he was my doctor. But the beauty and the funny thing about, you know, kind of growing up in a family, you know, where your dad's a doctor, is like, I never went to the doctors. I never went because my dad would just like do his checkups at home. Well, I guess.
Would he do like a cough kind of check?
No, he would never. No.
I mean, because you have to have those eventually.
I guess so. I think he just like could monitor us just far enough away. Like, all right. Like, he was always like the very chill, because I've told you this before. So my dad was a doctor. It was perfect because he was also the ultimate scoutmaster. Like growing up, we were in scouts, and we literally just came from Oregon for a celebration for my dad. We gave him the Golden Beaver Award, which is actually
exciting.
Kind of a made up award. The Silver Beaver, for those in scouts, Silver Beaver is like one of the highest awards you can get. You would only get as a leader, not as a scout. But we kind of made up this one, the Golden Beaver, because it's better than silver. But it was kind of our way of just, we got all of our old friends, people that were scouts under him, leaders. And we just got a group of like 70 people, and we kind of commemorated like my dad's life. We showed video, we had memories, and we had people telling stories. It was really awesome. And my dad, you know, he really changed a lot of lives. He was incredible as a scout.
Yeah, you really look up to your dad.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice. It's nice to see that the family just all supports, you know. Oh, yeah. Your family's very supportive. You're all very, for the most part, very close.
Yeah, yeah. And he being a scoutmaster, he was put a lot of that, and a doctor, he put a lot of emphasis on first aid. And it was very much like, you know, there's a famous story in our troop growing up where we had this kid who, like, they were out on a camping trip and they was climbing over this old log with a branch, and he fell and impaled right into his leg. And I mean, blood was coming out.
What'd your dad do?
Well, it's not what he did. It's what he made the boys. The boys had come up like, brother heater. Cause he was, it was a scout troop, but it was also through our church.
Right.
And so what do we do? And he was like, well, you guys know your first aid, start treating him for shock. And he was just like, you know what to do. He's like, you've been training.
And you guys handled it?
Well, I wasn't there. It was a famous story. I wasn't there, but like, I know the guy, just saw him again. But yeah, they treated him for shock, wrapped him up, cleaned the wound. And it was, I mean, it's a very famous story.
Famous story about your father.
Because he was just like, yeah.
You guys do this. You know what to do.
You know what to do. I've taught you.
That's a teacher, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That would have freaked me out, though.
Yeah, so
but you're right here. You're a doctor. No, I don't care. Like,
I get that you trained us, but this is, and he was like, no, this is not out of your realm. You guys can figure it out.
So you really look up to your father. Like, you guys are very close. Was he always very supportive of everyone in the family and just like always loving? And was he that kind of father?
He's the kind of father that was like, his father left when he was oh man, I should know this, but it was when he was young. He was probably like almost a teenager, and he was the oldest in his family. And then his dad left. And so he, and that's a whole nother story, which was really kind of came full circle a few years ago when my grandpa, when his father died, and we started to get to know him. But my dad was very forgiving. Like after years and years of like having been separated, you know, he started spending time with him because he knew he wasn't going to live much longer. And so,
wow. So he embraced him.
Yeah.
And when he probably resented him a lot.
Well, it's weird. He never opened up that much about his, he just never had much of a relationship with his dad. And after his dad came, like he moved to Hawaii and had a whole nother life in Hawaii. He left his family, left and went with another woman. And then, but then he built a whole other life where people like he did amazing stuff. It really was a lesson in learning, like you left this family and a terrible thing. You went on to start this other life where his dad was a doctor as well and changed people's lives. He saved this family like from an abusive relationship. Took them under his wing and he got married to this woman. And then he had like a whole new family. It was an incredible person, did incredible things. I still meet people who sometimes like, oh yeah, you're Dr. Heater, your grandpa delivered me. Like, as he was a OBGYN as well.
But that's crazy.
Yeah.
The juxtaposition of like, wow, horrible. He leaves one family. Yeah. So you're like, this guy is an asshole. And then at the same time, he goes and becomes this great man somewhere else.
It's odd. It's very odd. And when we went to his funeral, I started meeting, you know, family members I'd never really talked to or had ever met before. And you just start getting all these stories from both sides. And it's not that everything's justified or there was no answer. There was no perfect balance, but it was, but the end of that was my dad forgave him. My dad forgave him. It was really incredible.
And forgiveness,
and I think some of his other siblings, it hit, you know, worse, but
your dad made the most of it and became this great man that you look up to.
Yeah. And in the last like 15 years of my, you know, grandfather's life, when he moved back to the States, then he moved up to Washington. So he was only one state away from my dad, who, you know, was living in Oregon. So he would make trips up and he wanted to have this relationship with his dad. And so coming around to answering kind of your question, like my dad never wanted that. He saw what his dad did and he was like, I want to be the kind of father who's around. But he's a quiet dignity, kind of describes a lot of his persona. He was not, we don't know me and all my brothers and my siblings, my sister, we were loud, rambunctious. We were all into film and making videos and being creative and being into art. And my dad didn't have a scrap of that. My mom, you know, she was an artist. Like, we don't know where any of that came from.
Right.
And my dad, who was just very, you know, everything was logical and everything was just like, he was our resident Vulcan. he was just like, but he governed us and he raised us and he loved us with, like, if we did anything wrong and my dad, he never like punished us physically or anything. He was just, he could give me a look like, I'm upset. And that was enough. I was just
That was it.
Oh, yeah.
I wish my dad could have just given me a look. Sometimes I get the hand.
Sometimes the marks are still here.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Now, I know dad now was diagnosed with Parkinson's.
Yeah, yeah.
And now that's got to be a horrible thing. I mean, how many years has he had it?
He was diagnosed, probably 10, 15. Oh man, it's weird. It's just like almost 10, 15 years. I'm not entirely sure, but at least 10 years ago. Yeah, he was diagnosed and, yeah, I mean, the amazing thing is, you know, he's lasted longer and done better than of course they expected. I mean, you feel like you hear that all the time. Like, you know, it's not going to go as well, or he'll go downhill quicker. And he's lasted a long time. Our gauge, I was telling you this earlier, our gauge is like, when does he stop going on backpacking trips? Because my dad, you know, again.
Yeah, I started you guys.
We
all
grew up,
that.
You know, in scouts. But the big thing was he just loved getting us outdoors, loved getting us camping, doing these, you know, physical activities to learn first aid, to learn, you know, self-reliance, to learn all these things. But, you know, it's still just we loved it. Backpacking. And so in our adult years, me and my brothers have tried to pick that back up. Let's go backpacking. Let's bring dad along. And I think sadly this last year might've been, you know, his last, he kind of told us like, this might be the last one. Cause yeah, it's just, he's slowing down. And
has it hit you? Has it, do you sort of, have you broken down about that?
Or I haven't broken down. I mean, it's sad, but he, you know, he's still here and I don't know. I've never really lost anyone yet that I've broken down. My grandma, his mom was the closest. Like I started, you know, like I am an emotional person, but I don't cry a lot, but I cry.
I don't notice you
things.
As an emotional person.
Well, I can be like, certainly when I watch stuff like, you know,
you'll
movies,
I can
tear up in movies. Okay. And when I think about my, you know, own personal stuff, I can, but I don't, I'm waiting for the moment. When something happens, whether I lose my father or I lose any of my kids or my wife, you know, I'm not waiting for that.
Right.
Hopefully that's way down the, hopefully I never lose them.
You just
lose
never
me.
Know. It's inevitable, yeah. But right.
But I know that moment's going to come where I'm going to break down maybe, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I have broken down, not broken down. It sounds weird, like off to the side of the road.
But sort of just depressed or
no. And I've definitely more in my adult years than my father years. Yeah. There have definitely been times around my kids, around my wife where I've cried and, you know, during hard times. So right. No, it happens. But I think in terms of losing someone, I think, you know, when my dad or mom go, you know, but it hasn't hit me yet because he's still here. I live closer to him now. I get to see him more often. And he, it's just, it's a hard thing. I'm just trying to live day by day. Yeah. I don't know if I can accept it. Like it's, I don't know, but he's still there
he's still
mentally amazingly. And I don't know all the effects. I know that sometimes, you know, dementia can roll in with any kind of, you know,
sure.
Disease or situation, but it hasn't really hit him that way. Yeah. He's slower speech and he's quieter. But he's still there.
Is he still your physician?
No.
Does he not ever...
No, he's done. He's
no,
yeah,
I know,
not,
I yeah.
He's,
yeah, yeah,
he
yeah.
checks me out. So no, I will still go. We'll still go to him for, you know, medical advice for sure.
When you say something,
because I've always kind of like, I think I got used to because I had a dad as a doctor. I never went to a doctor, so I don't even have a doctor now. It's terrible. I should. I need to get checked up regularly because it's a good thing to do.
He looks in the camera.
I looks in the yeah. But
anybody want to give John a checkup?
But I got so used to like, yeah, and I need to. So, but if something's like wrong with the kids, like, dad, what do you do again for this? What do you do?
Right.
Yeah.
What was their response? Because they don't seem like they'd be like your parents. Were they really excited for you, or did they want you to get into acting when you started? Like when you did Napoleon and you showed them, did you show them the short film that you made in college with Jared Hess? Did they see the short film? Did you show them things that you were doing?
I must have showed them Peluca, the short.
Peluca was the original Peluca,
yeah.
Napoleon.
I must have showed it. I was very proud of Peluca and I loved it. And I must have showed it to them because I showed them all our videos. So, my brother and I, we made videos all throughout high school. And I showed anybody I could show it to. Like anybody who's willing to watch, I showed it. Because that's what we do as filmmakers. Yeah.
This
so
is
exciting.
Great. Well, and no, but.
Yeah, well.
We think everything's great.
You have to know your audience.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a huge thing. And even at a younger age, I think I had a pretty good idea of who my audience is. And my dad has always been like, he wasn't really big into movies. Every now and then he would take us, you know, to the, but it just wasn't him. And so I must have showed him. I don't remember because it's like, dad's not going to get this.
But when Napoleon Dynamite became such a phenomenon, were they sort of like, because when I hit success, I took my grandparents to a convention and there was a line wrapped around and my grandfather goes, who are all these people in the line?
What's wrong with them?
Who are they here for? I'm like, I think they're here to see me. And he goes, what the hell is this?
What is wrong with these people?
This is crazy. He couldn't, it was mind blowing. And to see the look on his face of like, well, my grandson has some kind of accomplishment here. He did something that people recognize and they like him.
Yeah.
They were blown away. I took him to Planet Hollywood for a premiere once. And I just seeing the look on their faces made me happier than I've ever been. Seeing how happy they were for me made me happier than I could ever be. So did your parents, when did they know something's different?
It was a little bit of a, I say a curve. It took a little bit of time which is interesting because Napoleon almost, I say Napoleon took a little bit of time, but in the terms of, having it come out in June of 2004. But most people will tell you, oh yeah, Napoleon was an overnight success, right? Even though it took its time, but it was like out of nowhere. It felt like it was an overnight success because it came from nowhere.
Right.
Nobody was in it that anybody knew.
Right.
So yes, it was instant fame, but it still was like, I did this movie. My parents knew I was shooting this movie and they knew I was dabbling in the acting. And he was just like, yeah, well, that's what they did on their videos. We made videos and we directed them, but we would act in our act. I'm doing finger quotes.
Right.
Act in our videos. we would be on camera because I loved goofing around in front of the camera as well. So it wasn't a surprise. And my oldest brother and my sister as well, like they did like high school plays. They were all, especially my oldest brother, he was into drama. He was into the school plays. So that was actually, everybody thought he was going to go and be the actor. So when I just started doing it, it was just kind of like they knew we wanted to get into Hollywood somehow.
Right.
And into the movie making. So it wasn't that big a surprise with that. But we do Napoleon. Napoleon's coming out and it goes to Sundance. And Sundance, I tell everybody, that's really when my life changed. Everything changed was Sundance because that was the first validation. Right. That was the
Could
first
you just
audience.
Feel what would happen? You went to a screening for it.
It was you would call it the premiere, but it was at Sundance. It was the first screening.
Packed
Huge,
house.
Packed. It was packed. It was like one of their biggest venues there. As big, if not bigger than, way bigger than a normal
was
movie.
Was the first time you had seen the movie?
Yeah. I'd seen part. I don't know if I saw the whole movie, but I saw Rough Cut, which, that early on in my career, I was like I cannot watch a Rough Cut again of a movie I'm in.
Yeah, I know.
Because I was just like, this is bad. They're like, no, the sound's not done. The picture's not locked.
It's
whatever.
Hard to comprehend.
Yeah. So I just kind of put that out of memory and waited for the first screening to really,
Were you nervous at the screening?
I was not nervous.
You weren't?
No. Jared, the director, he was sitting right, I think right behind me or next to me or whatever. He was nervous. He was dry heaving because this was his baby.
He was dry heaving.
Yeah. He was like off to the side. Yeah. He was nervous. He was absolutely nervous. And I was like kind of thinking, Jared, what do you get to lose? We're not anybody's right now. Like we've got nothing to lose. So if it's no good, if people don't like it, then, it's embarrassing for a small amount of people in my life.
Right.
But I also knew we did the short. I believed strongly in the product. I was like, dude, I think if it's not great, it's not going to be terrible because they just don't get it, whatever.
Right.
But we watched the first screening. It was one of the most memorable moments of my life.
What was it like? What was it like with people coming up to you?
The first shot of this film. He's standing there. I'm standing there with the trapper keeper waiting for the bus. And that's when people just like, they started laughing. And like,
immediately.
Kind of chuckling. And then because people in an audience, especially at Sundance, and they know they're with the filmmakers, people want to be the first to discover something. So they're willing. They're going out on a limb to take a chance.
Right.
They're willing to be the first people who are like, no, this is awesome. And then if it doesn't do well, then they might, retract that statement later. But
right.
they want to be the ones to say, no, I was the first one to see it, if it, in case it does, you know, find success.
Was, yeah.
But I think it was also just genuine. People were laughing. And
was Kirsten your wife with you?
Yeah, she was with me.
Was she surprised? Like, oh my God, like the response?
I don't think she
knew. It was a constant laughter the whole movie. Like,
yeah, it was going great. The whole screening went great. And it was building and building. And then, you know, the dance scene is kind of like,
when you
that's
dance.
The climax, but it's also the first time I was like, that's where I really put myself out there. And it was so personal to me. Like every line on the film, Jared Hess wrote.
Right.
But the dance was all me. He just wrote.
So how many takes did you do the dance?
Well, that was just, it was three takes.
Three takes.
Yeah.
And you came up with your own stuff. Did you rehearse it on your
own? No, no rehearse. We did like a little rehearsal of the first like 2-8 counts.
Ryan, you remember the dance?
Of course.
I mean, how do you not remember the dance?
Yeah, I just winged it. It was just all freestyle.
And people lost it.
Yeah, they loved it. They loved it. Because you're like, because Jared and I were saying like, you know, this dance better be, it's not just good, but it's going to make or break. Hopefully it all culminates to this moment. And if the dance isn't good, because in the movie, the audience loves it. The high schoolers love it.
Right.
And you hope it matches the crowd, the real audience watching it.
Right.
So you're hoping. And after the dance, then there's that pause and the audience cheers. And then our real audience is cheering. And it was just like, you know, I felt like $1 million. And I think after that, Jared was like, okay, I'm in the clear.
Did you feel like my life's changing right now?
I mean, had to. I remember that feeling when I was in high school and I would show videos that I made.
Right.
I loved it. I loved that feeling. I would show it to classrooms. I would do class projects and we put that up. And it's that feeling as a director, you know, like, or if you're an actor or director, especially if you're the director or producer, you know, you made the film, you get that high from just like, this is my audience and they're going to watch it and people are loving it. And you're doing it for you, but literally just watching this documentary on ILM.
That we're watching the Star Wars on Disney Plus.
And these filmmakers like George Lucas saying is like, me and Spielberg and, you know, Coppola, you know, we did like to make movies for ourselves. And a lot of times like they're doing it to like, you know, a lot of filmmakers go out there like, I want to make the movies I want to make. But these, I mean, he admittedly is like, we are the filmmakers trying to make movies for people, the audience. We want to make movies for the audience. We want to see, yes, we're going to enjoy it at the same time, but we want to wow. We think we know what audiences want and we want to wow them.
Right.
And that was just part of like, you know, who I was, and we want to make something. Now, Napoleon was kind of a personal thing, especially for Jared. You know, he's making something that he needed to make that for him, hoping, well, I don't know if audiences are going to like this movie.
Right.
So anyways, yes, I knew my life was going to change.
Why? Yes. Why? We've talked about this, but I just want to bring it up quickly. Were you ever like, why the hell wouldn't he have done a Napoleon Dynamite 2? Why didn't Napoleon go to college? Why didn't Napoleon do something else? It was such a blockbuster hit, and they do so many shitty movie sequels. There's movies now they make that the first one's not even good. Or they make a sequel of something from the 80s that never was good. And then they're, and so it's like you have such a huge success.
You just said it right there, right?
What?
Well, that's why. Isn't that why then we don't make a sequel? Because it.
Well, this was such a big, big success, and the characters were so lovable that I was dying to see them again.
Well, we made the cartoon.
Yes, but the cartoon wasn't live action.
No, it wasn't live action.
It was fun, but
great.
It wasn't.
I loved it.
It was great. But why do you think, A, were you a little disappointed, honestly? B, do you wish there was a Napoleon Dynamite 2? And that's all. I just have to.
I was fine not doing a sequel. We never, you know, when we made it, we weren't thinking in terms of like producers or, you know, marketability or like franchise, which I do remember. That said, you know, I remember pretty early while we're shooting it, we knew we were onto something, at least with like all the dialogue and the lines, like, oh man, you could totally make like Uncle Rico dolls and you could make Napoleon dolls and pull strings and they all have their different lines, flipping idiot, gosh, or
yeah,
like back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin quarter mile, you know, whatever, like yeah. They each have their, every character had their lines. So I saw that there was something with this colorful cast of characters and that you could, there was, could be a life beyond just the film.
Right.
But I wasn't thinking sequel. I just thought, I was actually thinking merchandise. I was like, yeah, you could do merchandise, but which is so stupid because I should have signed something right then and there. Like,
you didn't make any money off merchandise.
I think I made a little bit. I don't even.
Not much. You didn't make much off Napoleon.
It's negligible. So, but no, when they started asking, we didn't even think about a sequel. Nobody was even asking a sequel in the beginning. You know, it wasn't until like, you know, probably later that year or the year after when my agents were like, well, you know, Fox is like, they want to do a sequel. Like, would you be willing to do one without Jared? And I think they were just asking because they probably...
Without Jared, the director.
Well, yeah, because they were probably feeling like, I don't know if Jared's going to be up for this.
And would you say I'd be up for it?
Because he might have already said no. I don't know, but...
Would you say?
I said, no, I wouldn't do it without Jared. I was just like, no, because this is...
Do you regret that?
No, I don't regret... No, not at all. Because this was Jared's... This was Jared's. Jared, I mean, this was like his life growing up in Preston, Idaho. And it was very personal to him. And I've always, you know, respected out of choice, but also just naturally like respected, like the idea that, no, this is his baby. He brought me in on this. And I'm eternally grateful that I'm part of this family now. I'm part of this creation, but it's still Jared's. Right. And it's his vision, and to do a sequel without him, just, it made no sense. Nobody, I can tell you right now, none of the other casts would have done it without him.
But if you said yes, they would have made it?
If I said yes, I don't know. Well, but if I,
who knows?
There was not a world where it was gonna, if right. I also, you know, all the other actors now, like we were close at that point. We were like all in it, but we were all like, yeah, this is Jared's thing. There wouldn't have been a world. I wouldn't have said yes if I knew there was a possibility that the other actors would say no. If I said yes, I don't think they would have. I don't know if they would have followed me. I just never would have said yes if Jared wasn't involved. Right. It made no sense. I wasn't ready to make that kind of crap.
Right. I understand.
Because it would have been crap, you know, if it wasn't Jared. And so that's why. And I think Jared was just moving on, trying to do other projects.
Nacho Libre, he went on to do some things. What is, what's the one line people constantly ask you to say?
Well, I think the number one line is, teenage fat lard, come get some ham.
Is that the one?
Yes, 100%. And that one took me by surprise because, you know, I thought, yeah, all the accessible lines like flipping idiot, gosh, lucky, all that stuff was like, yeah, you can use that in so many countless situations. People are going to be saying that. And then what I started hearing over and over and over in t-shirts and people come out just like, Tina, you fat lard. You know what our favorite line at home is? Tina, you fat lard. It was just like, what? Like, that doesn't make sense.
What's your favorite line?
You have to have a Tina that you know. She has to be fat and it has to be dinner time or there's got to be some hamling or like, there's so many.
Tina, come and get it.
But people are like, oh yeah, we use it for everything.
What's your favorite line?
My favorite line is the crystals line. It's like, hold on a second. I forgot to put in the crystals. He's talking about the time machine. And yeah, he's just like, he's about to get this gun. And then it's just like a super, super like extreme close up of his awkward fingers putting the crystals in the little like hole. And he's like, put the, oh yeah, that's of course the time machine requires crystals to power.
When you do the Japanese line with Japanese scientists explained, did you really flub up the line?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, I think I flubbed that, but like, you know, I knew Jared and I were so in sync. Like I knew he wasn't going to cut. I was like, yeah, that's just, we're going to make this as real as, you know, this is what he would do.
How bad did the shoes that you wore smell at the end of the shoot?
They were bad. They were like, I don't remember the smell as much as just the feel. They were falling apart. Yeah, they smelled bad.
You had to tape them up?
Yeah, we had to tape them up. We had to, for the dance scene, it's hard to see, but for the dance, by the time we did the dance, because it was one of the last things we shot.
Right.
And there's tape around one of the boots, or possibly both, because the soles were starting to come apart. Because we did a lot of running. A lot of it is cut out of the film, but there was a lot of running where I would just be in the middle of, you know, Idaho and on a gravel road when I'm like late for the dance or I'm fishing for the bass for, you know, for Deb, and I'm just running on gravel road and it's just forever. And it's just running. And it's like, oh yeah, those poor boots couldn't handle it.
You now are going on little tours to places for screenings and doing Q&As with two cast members.
Yeah.
Efren Ramirez.
Yeah.
And
John Grice.
And John Grice. So you guys do these, how many, where are you going?
Oh, we go all over. I mean, all over the country. We're waiting for the rest of the world to catch on, but I think I'm convinced that we are big in English speaking countries.
Okay.
It doesn't translate. I don't think it translates quite well to foreign language. Like when they have to do a dub, it's just not the same when they're like, Kuso! You know, like it's like it's,
that's your Napoleon in Japanese.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. I mean, I would love to, you know, travel the world, obviously, to do some of that stuff. And we have, but it's like New Zealand, Australia, England.
Good crowds, though.
Oh, great crowds. Yeah. No, I mean, if you speak English, you love the movie.
And what where can people get tickets to go do this?
I don't know.
Just maybe do you post on your Instagram about it?
I should.
Well, people need to know where the hell to go here.
Yeah. Well, they just, if it's near you, you'll probably hear about it somehow.
Jeez. Talk about lack of promotion. That's one thing.
I got it. Well, yeah, if it's near you, I probably should, you know, promote it. But I don't.
Well, that's also one thing I've always admired about you in a lot of ways, that you just don't ever get caught up in the business. Whether it's social media or just Hollywood, you love Hollywood in certain aspects. You love movies, you love your family, you love your friends, and the balancing is pretty remarkable. I don't know anybody who. It's almost absurd how removed you are from Hollywood, but yet you're still in Hollywood because you don't live here. You have a full family life. You don't really go on social media that much. Yet you're working. How do you do that? Are you just not interested in that?
No, it is weird because I always wanted to work in Hollywood where I wanted to make movies and I wanted to get in that, make movies or animated. So I majored in animation. Yeah. So I was always really into art. I wanted to do art. I just wanted to create. I wanted to create and make, you know, fun stuff and awesome stuff. And so I love Hollywood for sure. But I think after a while, you know, we were just like, it's hot here. It's so hot. I love the Pacific Northwest, having grown up there. And so that's why we moved back. But, you know, I'll tell you, man, I know I've probably told you this before, but I've always felt like no matter where I'm discovering, like I'm constantly an outsider in the way, like not when I grew up, you know, where I grew up in Oregon, like it's great. Perfect child. I mean, it was a great child. I loved it. I'm obsessed with it. I always tell people like how much, if I could match that childhood for my own kids or whatever, you know, I love that. But, you know, moving, getting, you know, going to college in Utah and getting the Napoleon gig and then moving out to LA. Yeah, for sure. I felt like an outsider. Oh, I'm this, you know, small town guy. I'm not the smallest town, not a total like hayseed, but kind of like, hey, I did not grow up in Hollywood. I do not have Hollywood parents or any kind of pedigree that or family tree that, you know, worked in the business. So I'm here. I feel like an outsider. I've always, you know, the entire time I lived here, but not in a bad way. I kind of embraced it and loved like, oh, that's kind of what set me apart a little bit. But then, you know, again, like for the reasons I just explained, we moved finally. And I love it up there. But I now feel like, well, I'm the Hollywood guy, or at least it is in my blood to be like in the entertainment industry and up where I moved up into Washington area. It's like,
there's not much of that.
No, there's not really much of that. And once again, I feel like an outsider, but again, in a good way. Like I love it. You know, people around me, I mean, boy, where we moved, there's like countries and farms and it's like some very different vibe out there than out here in LA. And I love them both. It was hard to leave California. I'm now full on West Coast, baby. Like just
West Coast, baby.
California, Oregon, Washington. I love it all. And they're all different vibes. But I don't know. Like, I just, yeah, I've always felt like an outsider. And I think that's how I always will feel. But I think a lot of people, in a good way, like, I love that.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. We've talked about this before, but you're not a person who really gets anxiety, are you?
No.
It's crazy because four kids, married, balancing an acting career, and doing all these other things that you do, it just seems like every morning would be anxiety. Holy crap, I've got four kids of different ages and going through different things, and one's shy and one's,
I almost feel like anxiety is the result of not handling stress well. Like, if you get stressed and you let it get to you, then you have anxiety. I don't know if that's true. But,
well, I let it get to me.
But
it gets to me.
Because, and what I'm saying is, everybody will have something to stress about. And yes, I will have stress, but then I don't try not to stress about it, or at least let the stress affect me too much, you know?
How do you do that?
I think it's just a natural, I don't know. I don't, it's never,
the
I've
way
always,
you were raised, do you think has anything to do with it? Self-reliance?
Yeah, it's so hard to say. I mean, it could be. I was always pretty happy. I always try to think, like, what made my childhood, what made me who I am, and why did I feel, I truly felt happy as a kid.
Yeah.
I think a big part was I have a twin brother. Okay. So I always think about, like, I always had a playmate. Yeah. And in this case, you know, I know a lot of twins are different. My twin and I, you know, we're the same, but the same in the way that it was perfect because we liked the same things. We had the same interests. We had the same talents and skills. We were pretty much the same at everything, but instead of becoming a really competitive and yes, there's probably an underground competitiveness that lays there that therapy would probably unleash, like,
sure,
a monster. But
I
don't know. At the same time, it doesn't really, like, we've also been very supportive of each other.
Yeah.
But you know, growing up as a kid, you always had a playmate. You always had someone there. And I think that laid a foundation. And also my dad being a doctor and scoutmaster, and even when he wasn't
he
my
just
scoutmaster,
felt safe, didn't
I you? Felt safe. I always felt safe, like everything's going to be okay. And I think that's a huge...
Yeah, I don't think I felt that. I didn't feel that as a child. I felt like nothing's going to be okay.
Yeah. And
everything is in chaos. My life is in chaos. My family is chaos.
Yeah.
The world around me, everything is in is chaos. And I think that that has affected me tremendously. I mean, it's you know, product of your own environment.
And I don't know if that was my dad's thinking in his brain, but, you know, he was successful and he just instilled that sense of security. But, like, okay, but it's not just security, it's safe. It was just like, okay, I felt safe, even though we maybe sometimes physically were doing crazy stuff and he had us go on trips, but more like the future, like everything's going to work out, you know? But it's also, I think, in large part due to my faith,
yeah,
you know, and like believing in that, you know, like good will come from our good acts. But even then, like if you are good at heart and you're doing your best, you're enduring to the end, as we say, and you are doing your best to keep the commandments, to do good unto others, and to, you know, just all around be a good person and to do good and to be kind and do all these things. And to follow, you know, be a Christ-like, you know, person, follow in his footsteps and be like him. And I think that encompasses all the great stuff about just loving everyone. And anyways, yeah, everything I say, right, just trying to do good, then all will be good. I mean, and
it's
even
sort
if
of
you
embedded
don't,
in you.
Yeah. And even if you don't experience it, and there are certainly things I've, you know, like there are times where I feel like, you know, whether it's been hopeless or just like, oh man, this sucks. Or I don't know. Like, I just always feel like, you know what? It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And that's what I'm trying to do with my kids. Like, and my family is just like, I'm not my dad. I'm not as smart as him. I'm not as talented as him. I'm not as like, I'm just not him. I don't want to put myself down, but you know,
I'm way more talented than my father.
I can't create that same kind of house. And you know, and so I'm always like, if I can just help my kids feel like they're safe and that everything's going to be, as long as they are trying to do their best to be good, you know?
Yeah.
Then, you know, you're going to be okay. But trust in yourself, push yourself. You got to push yourself. You got to try new things. You got to like get out there and just, you know,
explore
and do uncomfortable things to help yourself learn and grow and expand your mind and your body and your spirit. Yeah.
That's cool. I like, you know, look, every, you know, different things work for different people. And I've seen religion where it doesn't work. And I've seen religion where it works. You have a close family. You've all gone to church since you're tiny, and it's worked for you. It's worked for your family. There's a lot of things that work for you, you know? And it's also, I like when you don't see people always saying, you should be this. You're a Jew. You should be a Mormon. You should, you know, you don't preach.
Yeah.
You don't preach.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever been starstruck?
Yeah. I don't know. Ever struck dumb, not starstruck dumb, but just, I've always played it cool. I've always been like, yeah, no, that's great. I can tell you the few little times I ran into Ali G, Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
At an early party in my career.
Right.
And I found that if I was running into people that I felt maybe they're not as big here in the States or something I had just been watching. I don't know. Like, I just remember running into him and thinking, whoa, okay. And at the same party, there's, you know, Mel Gibson or there's, you know, huge names. And I think they're incredible, amazing, but I didn't get Star Trek maybe because I wasn't meeting them, you know?
Right.
But even if I was, it was just like, you know, I don't know, like running into him, that was awesome.
You got a little starstruck.
I got a little starstruck.
Was he cool?
Yeah, it was very cool, but it was very brief. It was just like, hey, man, yeah, hey, okay. And then we go. It's Patrick Stewart.
Really?
Because I've always, like, I loved Star Trek Next Generation growing up. Patrick Stewart, I've always been like, and I would tell people, if I could meet someone, I'd love to meet Patrick Stewart. And I finally ran into him.
Oh,
actually,
thank you very
much. Played my dad in a movie. He played my dad. We didn't share any scenes.
What was that?
It was
the Walt Disney one.
Yeah, it was called Christmas. No. It was called Christmas Eve. It was a small independent film, right. You know, and it was kind of like one of those where it's all these different intertwining stories. So I never shared any scenes with him. I never met him during production. I didn't meet him until we did the press. Premiere for the film. Yeah.
Right.
And it was, I mean, it was amazing, but I don't know. It's like, because we didn't sit and have a lunch. I think I would have been more starstruck if we could have a one-on-one.
Right. Cause then you're like, it's pressure. It's like, oh,
James Cameron was one of the other really amazing. Like I went to a private screening of Avatar.
Wow.
When he was right before it was coming out in theaters at my friend won an auction. There was an auction where he got tickets to a private screening at James Cameron's personal theater at Lightstorm. And so I go there with my buddy and he's there and he does. And it's only like, you know, 15, maybe 20 people, just like a very intimate audience.
Wow.
And he goes, he intros the film. He's like, afterwards, I'll do a little Q&A, you know, no problem. So he comes in after the film and he's like, hey, and he's like answering questions. And I was like, all these people are licking his butt. They're not even asking questions. They're just saying, oh, it's amazing. What you're doing with this film. I was like, I'm going to ask him a real question, like a geek. So I asked him about so I heard about this really involved process that you did with the motion capture sensors for the face to capture the facial movements. I was like, you want to talk about that? Or how did you exactly do that? And he looked at me and he's like, oh, that's a great question. And then he paused and was like, you're John Heder, aren't you? I was like, oh my gosh. And so that was a huge, like he was like saying, oh yeah, me and my family were fans. That was a starstruck moment for sure.
Well, what about working with Will Ferrell?
Well, yes. I mean, but then you don't think of, starstruck, but I don't think it's not starstruck dumb. Like the first time we met was on the ice. It was for training. So he didn't get connected to the film until after I did. Originally it was going to be Ben Stiller and I. And then Ben couldn't do it. So, you know, but Ben was producing. He was like, don't worry, John, we'll get someone else. I was like, oh, so bummed. And then he was like, oh, we got Will Ferrell. I was like, okay, that's pretty cool, I guess.
No, you didn't. You
no, were, of course I no. Really I was like, happy. I was just like, okay, that's pretty sweet. Because so yes, but the first time we met, because he was so humbled, I think humbled by the ice.
Right.
I was just like, I just remember he was like, "You ready to do this?" And I was like, "This is a perfect thing for him to say," because I could see kind of the excitement, but also he knew like I was, I don't know, like. He was a really cool senior in high school with the Letterman's jacket. And I was Lucas, the nerdy little freshman who was being taken under his wing. And it introduced me to all his like cool high school buddies.
Could you tell Will liked you? Was there something, did you tell he like, or was it just business? And just like, hey, great seeing you. Like, or did you guys hang out or what?
Come on, dude. What's not to like?
What's not to like?
No, I think he liked me. I mean, he didn't seem, he was very down to earth, not at all. He didn't BS anything. Like, he was very kind and sweet. And
did he make you laugh a lot?
Oh, yeah. It's like, but he wasn't trying. He was just like, he was a filmmaker. Like, he was just like, oh, like, let's do this. And we think about it and like, all right, let's do this thing. But he was also kind of like just chill. And like would make jokes. We'd laugh about people on set or like, oh, what about this guy? And we try things out. I loved working with Will. It was a dream come true.
Yeah.
And you know, I learned a ton, but yeah, I think he liked me. I will say this. This is cool. So, you know, unlike a lot of other, I've worked with a lot of people. And I don't keep in contact with most of them. I mean, not out of choice. It's just like, you know, Will's on another level. And honestly, I don't have his number. I never got his number. We weren't big in sharing stuff. So, but I, years later, this is the first time I had seen him. Like, there was something where we were trying to produce and get made back in 2010. So I saw him then, or 2009.
Right.
So anyways, years later. This is a couple of years ago. I go to this the screening in LA for a show that he was in, but he was a small part in it. But I was invited regardless by, I think, my management. So I bring my buddy and we're going. And this is my buddy who's not in the business at all. I was like, this would be fun to bring him here. There's a lot of people. It's just it'll be a fun thing to watch. So we're walking around. And in the after party, you know, they have all those tents set up and I finally see Will and he's in the back corner, kind of alone and, you know, admittedly looking kind of tired and a little grayer than I remember, but it was just, he was tired and he was just sitting the whole time and everybody around him was like, you know, standing and talking to him, but there wasn't a huge crowd. I don't know. Like it was just, he probably just wanted it to be kind of quiet and alone. And I was like sitting there with my buddy. I was like, dude, you have to go. Like you did a movie with them. I was like, I know. But I never like bothering people. I just like, especially at parties, like I don't need to bother them. But it is a party. He wouldn't have come if he wasn't ready to socialize a little bit.
So you went over.
So I was like, fine. But I did say to my friend, like, watch this. Like see him. Because the interesting thing, he wasn't standing at all. And I'm guessing he was just tired and like, oh, people can sit down or talk to me. I was like, dude. Watch this. He's going to stand for me. So, you know, I walk over there and finally I was just like, dude, Will, and you know, we lock eyes and he's just like, oh, he's like the big eyes. And she's like, John. And he stands up and gives me a big hug. And I was just like, looking at my friend, I was like, yeah. No. I was just like, yeah. And it was great to have that reunion. And it was like, he'll always have a special place in my heart. And I hope I have the same place.
That's nice. Lastly, before we get into some Patreon shit talking questions with John Heater, I know you hosted Saturday Night Live and you say you don't really get nervous. You say you don't get anxiety. I don't know how one wouldn't get a little anxiety when they're going on national television to do Saturday Night Live. You had to be nervous.
Yes, I was nervous for Saturday Night Live, but in the good way. Like I remember this, it was exhilarating, which to me what felt like a mix of like, you're nervous, but it was just, I felt like I was in good hands. They were all so prepared and so like, this is what's going to happen. And it was a weird ride. I'm telling you, like if it was now, I feel like it would be more nervous, but I'd be more professional. So maybe I wouldn't be as nervous there. I was just kind of riding the coast. I was always professional, like, but I would probably, you know, input more jokes input more writing, come up with more
stuff. You let them do their thing.
Yeah, it was just like, hey, I'm kind of here along for the ride. I don't know what I'm doing, and but I'll do my best. But I was so young and still green, and I mean, creatively, I still had a lot to, you know, really kind of, you know, blossom, I suppose, right. You know? So it was a great experience, but I was definitely like, I was nervous leading into it, but also like using those nerves and just like, let's ride this wave, baby. And have fun. And it was a blast. I mean, I was like, I'd easily do this again.
Wow.
Did you hear that, Lauren? I'd easily do this again.
That's amazing. It just seems like, gosh, there's so much going on.
Lauren's like, yeah, okay, do another hit movie and maybe I'll let you in.
Yeah, get another hit movie. This is Shit Talking with John Heater. These are my patrons, lovable patrons who get to ask questions. And thank you. Go to patreon.com/insideofyou to become a patron. I'll message you. I appreciate you. Support the show. I love you. Thank you. Here we go. This is Megan H. Heater. What's the update on horror movies? Latest ones you've watched, liked, didn't like?
Heater. She says it like we're good friends. Maybe she follows us on. I feel like that's what people say when they really know it. Heater.
Heater. We're friends.
What's the update on horror movies? Well, we just gave you an update on one movie.
Black Phone.
No, we watched one last week that.
The Cursed.
The Cursed was great.
I thought it was okay.
It was good. No, I didn't think it was okay. I thought it was good. Yeah. Better than okay.
We also saw...
It was pretty fun.
What was the one where the kids have powers?
X-Men.
No.
Oh, that's right. It makes sense. He forgot
no,
that
it was
name.
Called...
The Kids?
Remember that in the old apartment building and the, you know, they dropped the animal through the stairwell?
Oh my gosh, why am I blanking on this? Are you sure we
did you not watch it with us?
Wait, drop an animal?
The Innocents.
Oh, I missed that one. Oh, thanks for ruining it.
That was pretty good.
You're mentioning the one I missed.
That was dark.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we were just talking about One Cut of the Dead.
Yeah,
go
we
watch
liked
that.
We not, watched that.
It's not scary, though.
No, but the first hour is the worst movie you've ever seen, and the last hour is one of the best you've ever seen.
Yeah.
So stay with it. Maya P., what are the best pranks you've pulled on each other?
Oh, man. You know, I feel pressured. I'll tell you this. In Hollywood, I feel pressured to be a prankster. Because every stupid like junket that you go to, press junket, they're like,
"What pranks?
So what kind of pranks do you guys do on set?" I've never been a prankster. I don't know. I was like, I feel like that should be in my nature. I'm a really, I like to think of myself as a really fun guy. I think pranks just feel mean to me, and yet you know people will get a good laugh as long as it's safe, but. It's still like, I'd rather laugh with someone than at someone. Not to say that pranksters are bullies, but I don't know. I'd rather put my creative juices into something. I think I fear the repercussion.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
If I prank someone, they're going to get me back.
And I'm like, and I can be a good sport. That's one thing I will say about like when I did all those years ago, when Ashton Kutcher's show.
Punked.
Yeah, I remember when that was out and that was popular and it was like, but seeing the show, I was like, this like it brought out the worst in these people.
Oh, yeah.
Like you just see them like lose their.
They tried to punk me many times and they kept going to Chris, our friend Chris McDonald.
Yeah.
Who.
They go,
Chris, we want to punk him. We want to punk him. We want to punk him. And he was like. He wouldn't do it. He said, no, I'm not letting
What do you mean
it.
He wouldn't?
He wouldn't let them do it to me.
Why not?
Because he knew that I would probably
lose it.
I'd lose my shit. I'd probably lose my shit. I would not look good.
Now, I was like, I remember when it happened thinking, after it happened, I was like, wait, but also leading up thinking like, almost like, am I going to get punked? No, like I'm not a name. I'm not like a big enough name. So I kind of felt safe. But then when it happened, I still felt good about the episode because I was, did not lose my, because they're like, if you do any, I mean, they're like, what if we ruin his car? He's like, my brother who they went to, he's like, well, he's got a pretty crappy car. He won't care. Or what if they do this? He doesn't care about that. Like you can't,
I you can't like, really get you.
I don't think I would get ever like, you know, yeah, pissed like
I,
that.
I lose my shit. Some of the things they wanted to do. I was like, no. Chris R, what would be your dream project to work on?
My dream project would be, I still would love to do a I would love to do like a sci-fi action, sci-fi movie, maybe with some action. I did my first real action film a couple of years ago, that Tremors movie.
Yeah, yeah. Tremors 5.
Seven.
Tremors 7. You can get that on Netflix, folks. It's fun.
Yeah. I mean, but it was like, it was finally doing like something with like, I didn't have a gun, but I had like a chainsaw. I had blowtorch. I mean, not a blowtorch, but a flamethrower. And you're running around doing stunts. I love doing action. I really did love doing action. I would love to do more of that. And I love sci-fi. I would love to do a sci-fi. I don't know. Exactly. Like, you know, it'd be amazing to work with the Coen brothers. Obviously, it would be like a dream come true.
Oh, yeah. Dana asks, if you can remake a scary movie, what would you remake?
I don't want to remake stuff.
I want to make new things.
No, I would remake a bad movie and make it good, right? How many movies? I'm trying to think of a movie we've seen like, now that could have been good.
Black Phone.
No, like, if I could remake a scary movie, it would be awesome. They made a movie. No one's made a good Wendigo movie.
Wendigo?
Wendigo. Oh, if you know your Native American lore from the Pacific Northwest. It's that.
Do you know it, Ryan?
The Wendigo. Some people.
Wendigo.
Pronounce it Wendigo. They made a couple of really, bad movies. But so I guess I would take one of those and try to remake it, but make it cool.
All right. The Chief. Where do you disagree or differ on your horror preferences compared with Rosie?
Oh my gosh. It's all horror. It's all
horror based. Well.
On our preferences, they nickname me John Hater sometimes.
We do. We say Hater because he hates a lot of, he hates everything.
No, I think with these guys, our group, and with Rosie, I can be a little bit more honest because I'm always pretty like, I think with film, I'm a little bit more critical, which is weird because I love film and I will be positive, but I love what it can do. And when I see the possibilities, I'll kind of hate on something, even if I love it.
Right.
And try to be positive, but like, I'm a little bit more, I think I am more critical, and yet there's been projects that I like that you don't like. So I don't know exactly where we differ. You're more like, you really want some good
scares,
jump scares. And I want scared. I want tone. I want like to be creeped out, like almost the entire film. Like, I don't care if it doesn't have a jump scare. But I think we're both looking for our hairs to stand on end for sure. And that's what we've both been looking for, but I'm a little bit, I don't mind mood as much.
Yeah.
And a slow burn. It can take its time. If it's got some cool moments, I'll be more forgiving of subtitles.
Yeah. Usually the subtitle movies are good. A lot of times.
Yeah.
We watched that found footage movie. That was pretty good. We all liked. And then there was another one. I forgot what it's called. Titane. And that was wild.
That was weird.
Oh my gosh. Anyway. Well, dude, I liked having you here. I know we only got to hang out for a day, but it was a lot of fun. We went swimming. We went for a hike. We had movie night.
We didn't do any of our old dives. What are our old dives? Our old dives is your basement. So
we watched the ILM documentary on Disney Plus. We had friends over. Your brother was here. It was good. It was good to catch up.
Yeah.
We finally did the podcast the right way.
The right way.
Yeah. He did it a long time ago, but it's not available the first year.
He deleted it because I was so unruly. And
he was all over the place. He was all over the place.
I was trying to like, all right, I'm one of his first guests, but I'm going to show people like I can like
do just
lay down and do whatever. Because I was also calling out. It's like, we literally just had this, everything you're asking me.
Everything
I talked to you.
Yes.
Normally,
everything says like you've talked to me about this before. What do you? And I'm like, dude, what do we have to talk about? People don't know this. They don't know.
Yeah.
But it was a real treat. Thanks for allowing me to be inside you, buddy.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, John. Love the guy. He's one of my besties in the world. He just cracks me up. I don't know. He's a good dude. He's able to just get out of the adult mode and just be a kid a lot.
just be fun. And I like people who are fun and laid back at the same time. It's easy to roll with it. You're not trying. You're just, he finds me funny. I find him funny. We just get along. And we both hate many horror movies because they're not good.
At the time of this recording, I don't know what Jason was able to use with the wide shot, but I forgot to focus the wide shot on this entire episode. If you were watching, I apologize about that. But
oh, well. You're just going to have to go back and forth. And that's what it was.
I'm sure he found a workaround.
I'm sure it was great. Hey, guys, if you're listening and you didn't listen to the intro, there's a lot of cool information about the new CD, cons that I'm going to. Listen to the intro again if you need that information, handles. Write a review for the show if you liked it. I really appreciate you. Right now, the top tier patrons, we're gonna say their names out loud. They make this podcast possible. They have supported the show since the beginning, many of them, and without them I couldn't do the show. And thanks for the support for Talkville, our new podcast. We're trying to keep that going, so thanks for the support. A lot of the patrons from Inside You are also patrons of Talkville. Go to insideofyou.com/patreon.com/inside patreon.com/insideofyou to be a patron and really help the show. It really helps. Here we go. Shout outs. Nancy D, Leah S, Sarah V, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Nico P, Robert B, Jason W, Sophie M, Kristen K. I think we forgot to send a box. She's a top tier and she's been a good friend and she sends me stuff, and her and Leah made the pillow I'm sitting against. And I just want to give her an extra shout out. Kristen K. We love you. You know that. We're going to mess up. We're going to accidentally not send a box, or something might break, or, and also if you order something, how am I supposed to know who it's for? If the shipping label says your name, that's who I'm going to write it to on the mugs or the things. Sometimes they're like, I didn't want it for that person. Well, how was I supposed to know? Sorry. Raj C, Joshua D, Jennifer N, Stacy L, Jamal F, Janelle B, Kimberly E, Mike E, L, Dan Supremo, 99 More, Santiago M, Chad W, Leanne P, Janine R, Maya P, Maddie S, Belinda N, Chris H, Dave H, Sheila G, Brad D, Ray H, Tabitha T, Tom N, Liliana A, Talia M, Betsy D, Chad L, Marion, Dan N, Big Stevie W, Angel M, Rhiannon
C,
Corey K, Dev Nexon, Michelle A, Jeremy C, Andy T, Gavinator, David C, John B, Brandy,
Carlisle
D, right. Camille S, Joey M, Eugene N,
Leah,
correct, Nikki G, Corey, Patricia, Heather L, Jake B, Megan T, Mel S, Orlando C, Caroline R, Christine S, Sarah S, Eric H, Shane R, Emma R, Jeremy V, Andrew M, Zuduichi 77, Orasi. Is it Orasi? O-R-A-C-I-E, Orasi. Orasi, Orasi. Chris R, Karina N, Michelle D, Amanda R, Amanda S, Jen B, Kevin E, Stephanie K, Lena 82, Jor-El, Jor-El, and Billy L. Thank you, Billy. Thanks for being a patron. I really appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. And, yeah, continue to listen, continue to support. I don't know what else to say. There's so many podcasts, and you choose this one to listen to. After a while, when people say they really like the podcast, I'm starting to believe it. I'm starting to believe that people actually like this podcast.
Good.
It's hard because, you know, it's, you compare. Well, that guy gets millions of listeners, and this guy. I have my loyal listeners, and that's all I need. All I need is people who want to listen. And they give, and hopefully I'm giving, and it's a mutual love and respect.
Mutual giving.
Mutual giving.
Yeah.
I am Michael Rosen from the Hollywood, Rosenbaum, from the Hollywood Hills in California.
I'm Ryan Taez.
Big wave to the camera. We love you. Be good to yourself, and thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.